You're listening to Marketplace Weekend, where the economy collides with real life. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. We're talking about gentrification this week, and we just explored what it can mean for a neighborhood. Now let's take a look at what it can mean for your personal finances. We asked our listeners and online community, and you answered.
A cup of coffee that used to cost me $2.50 is now costing me $5 to $6 on average.
Mostly in coffee purchasing. It's gotten more expensive.
I'm buying her coffee for her.
That's so true. I'm not paying.
I mean, I make coffee at home more often now.
It certainly drives up my expenses from everything for a cup of coffee to, food and beer.
Stay in and cook more often.
My groceries are more expensive. My rent's more expensive.
I try an Airbnb out my place occasionally to cover part of my rent.
It's increased my home value.
Everything's expensive. Apartments are almost unattainable.
Our property value, since we're homeowners in this neighborhood, is rapidly increasing. So I suppose at one point that will pay off for me. So it's a mixed bag.
Gentrification hasn't really affected my financial life at all, except for real estate investments. Those are higher.
My salary doesn't increase at the rate of the expenses that I have. So, yeah, it's impacted me quite a bit.
Life's gotten a lot more expensive, along with less parking.
To talk more about what changing neighborhoods and communities mean for personal finances, Chrissy Clark joins us again, along with Marketplace wealth and poverty producer Lindsay Foster Thomas. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Lizzie.
Thanks.
There are so many less overt elements at play here, right? You know, it's not just higher rent or fancy coffee. I want to talk a little bit about the reactions that you have seen from the people who you spoke to and what they've said about their personal finances. What kind of stories did you hear, both from longtime residents and then from the new ones?
People have been sending us pictures from their neighborhoods across the country. And, you know, there's an image of an old store in downtown Los Angeles going out of business. And we see this happening in Highland Park as well. And so when stores that you are used to, that you've been frequenting since you were a child, that your family is familiar with, have to leave, then the stores that are left behind or the stores that are coming soon are catering to a different class of people. That costs you money in the end.
There are a lot of low-income people who still live in the neighborhood, and some of these stores they just can't afford, or the menus aren't in Spanish, you know, where it's a very large Latino population. Some of the older restaurants have both Spanish and English on the menus, and some of the newer restaurants are not bilingual in that way. So just sort of little subtle things like that, too.
The flip side of this, though, of course, is say you have a young family that is moving from a neighborhood they can't afford into a new neighborhood that they can afford because it previously has had very low rents, and suddenly they can be there and maybe make an investment in that property or in the local school system. How did you see that play out?
If you ask almost anybody who moves to Highland Park, why did you move here, whether they moved here 30 years ago or last week, it's because they say, because I could afford it,
right?
You know?
Yes.
And what affordability means to different people, you know, it's all relative. And that can play out in really different ways. You have people with more resources who are sending their kids to the local schools. They're getting more attention. So that can benefit the whole neighborhood.
You know, as I'm thinking about sort of the personal finance of gentrification, one of the things you guys saw was longtime residents who are selling their properties, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you were lucky enough to buy a house in Highland Park 20 years ago or 30 years ago, you can sell that house that maybe you bought for $100,000 for possibly $500,000 or $600,000 now. And even with inflation, that's a good profit. And so that is a big dynamic. A lot of people are very excited to have built that wealth. Maybe they move to another neighborhood that maybe someday will be gentrified also, but that is still less expensive now. So that can really benefit those folks. It also, though, does mean that the character of the neighborhood is changing.
You know, our sort of tagline on this show is where the economy collides with real life. And this idea of collision seems to take place so much when you talk about gentrification. And I'm just thinking about the outcomes of that. And one of those seems to be balance.
I feel like we heard a lot of people who talked about how they kind of love the moment that the neighborhood is in right now, because it feels like it's in this sort of transitional in-between moment where it's getting more investment, it's getting energy from new people moving in and new businesses opening up, but it hasn't quite hit that tipping point where masses of people who have lived there previously are getting priced out. It's sort of in this like equilibrium right now. But I think there's sort of this fear, this anxiety that it's only a matter of time before it just gets so expensive that it won't preserve the kind of wonderful economic diversity and income diversity and ethnic diversity that's there right now. I spoke to a real estate developer named Dave Walker. He thinks about this and he realizes his own role in it and sort of struggles with it. And he basically said, you know, when you're investing and improving in a neighborhood, there's no natural stopping point. There's no air brake in the middle where you say, oh, that's enough. That's enough profit. You know, that I won't charge any more rent. That I've made enough return on my investment. I don't need to make any more money. He's like, that's just not human nature. And that's not how capitalism works. And that's the world that we live in. And so I think that that's one of the big questions facing neighborhoods like this and cities that have neighborhoods like this in them is, okay, there's no natural air brake, but collectively as a city, as citizens, do we want to create public policies that somehow put air brakes in place? What would that actually look like? How would you sort of bring investment into a neighborhood without causing displacement at the same time? I think those are the sorts of conversations that we hope to spark with this coverage.
Chrissy Clark and Lindsay Foster Thomas from our Wealth and Poverty Desk. You can check out the Highland Park Project at yorkandfig.com. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
You're welcome.